Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Shifting gears now, the Supreme Court effectively ended affirmative action for colleges and universities earlier this year, and the repercussions from that case could affect workplaces. People trying to promote diversity, equity, and inclusion, known as DEI, in Boston's workforce are thinking about what that means, and a lot of it's playing out in the region's tech sector. For more, we're joined by Boston Globe reporter Aaron Pressman for Tech Talk. Aaron, welcome.
Thank you.
And we're going to add a voice here. Lawrence Alexander is a Dartmouth-based independent diversity, equity, and inclusion and belonging strategist, previously worked in corporate and education worlds. Lawrence, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Glad to be with you.
Glad to have you. So, Aaron, I want to start with your reporting on this. Tell me what you've been tracking.
So a lot of efforts in Boston to improve the diversity of the economy involve startups, venture capital firms, Mass Mutual, the big insurance company, has a large fund. And the idea of these funds is to back companies and startup founders from diverse backgrounds who are generally overlooked in these markets. And what we're hearing now is starting to be some concerns about legal issues emanating from the Supreme Court case. I talked to one venture capitalist who said she was having a lot of trouble raising money when she was pressing this theme that she wanted to look for diverse founders.
And Aaron, you know, from your reporting, quote, startups with Black founders receive only about 0.13% of all venture capital funding in the third quarter, down from 1.2% a year earlier, according to Crunchbase, end quote. So we are talking about significant disparities over time for founders of color in the funding that they can get access to.
Huge, huge, huge disparities, and we have not made progress. There were a lot of promises made. Some of these funds arose after the George Floyd murder, and we're seeing that those promises are not necessarily being kept.
So, Lawrence, I'll turn to you now. What is going on in the diversity, equity, and inclusion center, sector or area with people beginning to think that the affirmative action case is going to bleed over into business? Help us understand that.
Aaron, I think you make a great point, and thank you all again. I think context in a cultural moment where history is a loaded topic, history is important. Affirmative action was only passed in 1965. So we're talking roughly 58 years of it being instituted for it in only 58 years to be a problem. So much of kind of what's been reported are issues with the what's, the tactics and the strategies. We haven't spent a lot of time about the why. Affirmative action, only 58 years old, really is meant to address what's happened for centuries before it. And so what's happening in this moment, there's a lot of pushback, a lot of fear mongering around the zero sum game. If there are more for historically marginalized and underrepresented companies, persons and individuals, well, what's left for the rest of us? For me, it's a really important moment in the DEI space for DEIB work to mature. Too often for these companies that have left money and intentions on the table where their statements initially began with the knee on George Floyd's neck, it's lost its steam because the decision related to affirmative action has impacted the who we can work with, whose boxes can we check, and hasn't spent a lot of time with the why. And I'm encouraging corporations and the companies that I'm working with to revisit the why. For many of them, whether they are global, multinational corporations, it is part of their missional value proposition to reflect and engage with the globally diverse stakeholders that they represent.
So let me jump in there for a minute, Lawrence. Thank you. And just for listeners, when you use B, when you say DEIB, you're using the word belonging for that B. So let's talk about where the disruption is coming in that you're pushing back on, Lawrence. I'll turn back to you for a minute, Aaron Pressman. In Atlanta, for example, a venture capital firm called Fearless Fund was blocked by a federal court from distributing money under a program geared toward promoting Black woman founders. Detractors said such programs, and this is what Lawrence was getting at, discriminated against other people on the basis of race from receiving grant funding. So here's a little sound. CEO of the Fearless Fund, Ariane Simone, pushed back on that during an interview with CBS Mornings back in August.
Well, the problem is this program wouldn't even exist if there wasn't a need for it. The reason why the program exists is due to the racial disparities that exist in venture capital.
And there are similar programs in Boston.
Yes, exactly. And that's sort of where we are wondering what's going to happen. We have to be very careful in reporting on this and discussing it, because while there is a pending legal case against the Fearless Fund, lots of these other programs in Massachusetts that we have written about, like the Latimer Fellowship for Black entrepreneurs, have not been sued. So we're talking about, almost a hypothetical question. They're very sensitive to the fact that they have not been challenged, and it sort of, conservative legal theorists can say lots of things, but what's happening on the ground is these programs in Boston are still working and supporting Black and other people of color who are just starting up tech companies. It is still happening on the ground.
So, Lawrence, a very specific question to you. I think the subtext of what we're hearing from Aaron Pressman is we want to be careful. That's one case. Lots of other programs operating without legal challenges. There is this concept of a chilling effect, right? You see it in one place, you worry, will I get engaged in a legal battle if I do it too? Have you seen, Lawrence, other instances of chilling effects on diversity, equity, inclusion, and you use the word belonging as well, efforts in corporate settings or university settings in your work over time? Have you seen chilling effects happen elsewhere?
Yes, to the chilling effects. And where the chilling effects have happened has been where the DEI and B for belonging efforts have been the thumb on the hand.
What does that mean? What does the thumb on the hand mean?
Where it has been the initiative, the thing that we have done, wave nouveau, out of a fit of social consciousness, the thing that we do because it's in. I offer corporations the paradigmatic shift from DEI work being the thumb on the hand.
Like the fad right now is what you mean.
Correct. From it being the thumb on the hand to the marrow in the bone.
Meaning core to our culture, it imbues in everything we do.
That's exactly right. Take the example of working with vendors or funds. If we then stopped just looking at minority-owned businesses and funds and said, what is our vendor's process? There's often an uncoupling between the best and the brightest, and then those historically underrepresented.
Saying that's not the same thing.
That's correct. And so if we were to work to synonymize being inclusive with excellence, we would have inclusive excellence, and then it wouldn't have to be the thing we do when we get time or the nation reminds us that it's important.
So we're speaking with Lawrence Alexander, a Dartmouth-based independent diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging strategist, and Aaron Pressman here on Tech Talk, Boston Globe reporter. Aaron, so in listening to Lawrence, here's what it makes me think of, and this actually came up in your reporting. There is this thing called ESG that was huge for a long time around environment, sustainability, governance. I was working on a book, editing a book several years ago. We did a couple chapters on ESG because businesses were paying attention to it. And then there was a swing in another direction. And many businesses ran in the other direction because they didn't have to pay attention to it anymore because it wasn't in vogue. It wasn't the fad. It wasn't the thumb in the hand, to use Lawrence's term. What they had said before was good stuff. Now they didn't have to do it. They didn't have to spend the money, et cetera. You bring that up in your reporting. Is that the concern here, that we'll see that kind of pendulum swing?
I think that is a big part of the concern. One really important thing to keep in mind is California has passed a law which says that all the people who are investing, all the institutions that are investing in venture capital and other kinds of investment funds are going to need to start collecting data. And I think just the collecting data will shine a light on the situation in a way that perhaps can perpetuate won't just be a fad, right? It can keep going. It can keep being an important priority because we'll have really solid data that the state of California will be releasing. It will be effective all over the country because California is so big, that I think could keep the momentum there, even as a time when there is some political controversy around it.
So, Aaron, I'll stay with you for a minute. Give me an example of a startup or a company that has benefited from targeted funding for entrepreneurs of color or a diversity-oriented targeted funding that you've followed or seen here in Boston?
Right. So I think it's I'm not sure I'm going to get the name right, but it's I think it's Maglev Aero is the name of the company, and they are making a very high-tech electric aircraft kind of thing. And the founder is a black person, and so this is a company that has been supported by one of the programs that we mentioned earlier. I think another point to keep in mind, which is sort of all of what we've been talking about together, is sometimes when we look at this question more broadly, we can escape from some of the legal tangle. So I talked to Adrian Mendoza, who is a venture capitalist in Boston. He and his wife have a Latin venture Latin people with a venture capital fund, and they have supported all different kinds of founders of diversity. Elderly women, Asian Americans, black people, black women. So they are focused on diversity and improving the background of the people who they support, but they don't have particularly one single lens on it.
So Maglev Aero is the name of the business. And that is to the point that I think you've been making, Lawrence Alexander. So now I'm going to play you a little sound here. Janet Stovall, Global Head of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion for the culture and leadership consulting firm Neuro Leadership Institute, talking to NPR in August about how DEI work can survive in a post-affirmative action world.
Every organization has basically only three goals: make money, save money, achieve a vision. And if you can tie DEI directly to one of those goals, it gets a little bit harder for even those who want to destroy it to argue that they should.
So in a sentence, Lawrence, how do you tie your work to the make money goal when you work with clients?
I tie it to the value proposition, which is the bottom line. A departure from doing good because it's good, but doing good because it helps the bottom line.
Fantastic. Aaron Pressman, what will you watch now?
Well, I think we're going to see whether these legal challenges expand around the country. And the Fearless Fund situation in Atlanta, which everyone is watching very closely, it's just a temporary injunction. The appeals court is going to revisit it. It may go to the Supreme Court. So there's a lot more legal action to come.
All right. Aaron Pressman is a reporter with the Boston Globe. Lawrence Alexander is a Dartmouth-based independent diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging strategist. We've been looking at affirmative action ruling and how it might challenge DEI and corporations as part of Tech Talk. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.